your brothers and tell the tale so often told of the love that lies beneath our banner, the black, the white, and gold. So lift your voices in endeavor with brothers also good and true. Then we'll give a toast to the one we boast, to dear old Sigma Nu.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Gavel Podcast. I'm Adam.
And I'm Christopher.
The Gavel Podcast is the official podcast of Sigma Nu Fraternity, and it's a show dedicated to keeping you updated on the operations of the Legion of Honor and connecting you to the stories from our brotherhood.
To find out more from the fraternity, you can always check out our website at sigmanu.org. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at sigmanuhq or by searching for Sigma Nu Fraternity.
Christopher and Fred. Fred's on the show.
Hey, guys. Hey, fellas.
Welcome back.
We're about to give you a co-hosting credit. You've been on it so much.
I know. I think we talk about this every time, but like we need a challenge coin. Like you hit your fifth guest appearance, you get a challenge coin. I feel like that'd be sweet.
You know, like one of the smoking jackets that you get on SNL after you know, it's a five timers club.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I like it. Cool. You know, that's I think we're on to something. That would look really good. I mean, I'm jealous of Mike Long and other significant alumni who have that great Sigma Nu jacket they wear at our big events. If I could get something like that, you know, you can keep rely on me to come back to this podcast for sure.
But you can only wear it on the podcast where everyone can't see you.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I love it. Well, Fred is on the show and in our intro and outro here to talk about an interview that he was able to do with Lori Hart, Dr. Lori Hart. So a pretty cool interview. I got to sit in and listen in and do some production on it. But Fred, kind of tell us, how did we land this interview?
Well, Lori, as you guys know, and probably many in our audience know as well, is a living legend when it comes to health and safety and really the whole philosophy of harm reduction that we as a fraternity and sorority community have embraced over the last couple of decades, due in large part to the work of Dr. Lori Hart. And so it was a real honor to get to be able to spend some time with her on our podcast. She and I have been colleagues for many years now. I remember first seeing her speak at a conference and kind of being blown away with this concept of a ladder of risk, which is a program she developed for Pi Kappa Phi fraternity when she worked there. And that just kind of took on a life of its own with my desire to learn more from her and to keep digging into that brain of hers and learning how that can help influence the work that we do in Sigma Nu. So it was great to be able to speak with her. She now works at Holmes Murphy, one of the leading insurance brokers for the men's fraternity and women's sorority community. And so I've gotten to work with her in that capacity as well. And it was great spending some time with her talking and happened to have a conversation with her that we ended up recording for a podcast, which is great.
Yeah, pretty cool. So I mean, there's a lot of areas of expertise here, and there's a lot of areas of risk reduction and harm prevention. So, kind of, where did you focus in on for this interview?
So, a lot of it was seeing how her thinking has evolved over the decades of her work in this area. So, part of it was kind of starting from her origin story. What got her involved in this in the first place? And passionate about pursuing the topic and work of health and safety in the challenging community of fraternity and sororities and college students. And so, yeah, on that side, and then just, what has she seen change? And then most importantly, like, what from her experience is applicable to the work that our volunteers and our chapter officers and members do? What advice could she give to them on how they can make an impact in their own chapters and in their own communities, which I thought she really, shared some really profound, practical and applicable ideas that hopefully our audience will be able to take and run with.
Cool. Awesome. Well, let's stop teasing it and let's get into it. We'll see everyone on the back end.
Brothers in Sigma Nu United, brothers who by the sword were knighted, blessed by a star shining afar, rocked in the cradle of old Virginia, five arms that bind our hearts together.
Well, hello, Lori. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on the Gavel Podcast, Sigma Nu's official podcast. I know you've probably done dozens of these podcast interviews, media interviews. We're very excited to have you join us this afternoon. You know, we go way back. I've been now in this field doing this work for, shocking as this sounds, 16 years. I'm in my 17th year on the Sigma Nu staff team. And you may predate me a little bit beyond that 16 years, but for as long as I've been doing the risk reduction work and health and safety work in particular, you've been kind of a significant figure in that space within our community. So, the first question that came to mind, because despite that extensive history, I don't know if I necessarily know your origin story. So I was curious just to maybe kick us off, how did you end up becoming involved in this work of prevention with college students?
Good question. And you're going to really be dated when you say 16, 17, because I remember when you came in, just young, a young little Fred. So I go back to, let's take it all the way back to college. I was a sorority president, which had significant impact in this space. And I say that intentionally because there's probably some fraternity presidents, commanders, is that what we call them, listening to this. And you, though, how do you translate fraternity and sorority into your work? But I always say how you lead as a college leader will have tremendous impact in how you lead in your business world and your relationships and in your community. And so for me, it was that transformational like experience. And so when people have those moments, they go, well, how do I do this more? And so really pivoted at that point to work in higher education. I thought, well, I'm supposed to work at a college my whole life. So I got a master's degree, doctorate degree, and was working. I worked at Georgia State University, which was an urban commuter downtown campus. We had a Sigma Nu chapter there and loved it. I mean, it really taught me. I came from a big SEC experience to a really, like, my master's degree was this like public liberal arts school in the middle of Alabama. And then I get to Georgia State and I really was able in a very short time to see fraternity and sorority is transformational at every level. It does not take a house. It does not take numbers. It takes people who belong and believe in people. So I then start kind of just speaking on the side. I mean, in higher education, there was no speakers bureaus. There was no, I mean, there was a few giants out there and was speaking with never an intent of I'm going to start speaking. And how I really got into the space to start the origin, I think, was I was speaking, I was working, I was in California in a marriage, and we moved back to Atlanta and I couldn't find a job. And so my friend and colleague, Mark Timmies from Pi Kappa Phi, called me and said, come work for us. Now, women working in men's fraternities now is a dime a dozen. It's not a thing. Back then it was like, people would look at me like, oh my gosh. But I was really hired as a project manager to launch an alcohol program after we had had a student death. That was it. There was no discussion of prevention. There was no discussion of fixing it. They were like, and this is what we often do, even at the chapter level today, right? We have a big crap problem. We form a committee, we pick more education, and we assume that the gap is education. And so we start overly compliancing, educating our members. And so that's what I was doing. And I started doing that work in Pi Kappa Phi, launching a program. And we had another alcohol-related death that year later. I was 31 with a PhD, and I remember the national president kind of looked at me and said, fix it. And this is where I said, I don't know how to fix it. Prevention science is a young science at this point. I don't know if there's an internet. I think we exchanged articles at conferences. And so I didn't know what I was doing. And that started and launched. When you don't know what you're doing, you got two choices, run from it or try to fix it. And so that's where I dug into prevention experts. And I stuck and stayed with Pi Kappa Phi for 16, 17 years. It's a blur. Sometimes they call me today. I'm like, I don't work there. Like, we forget that I don't work there. And I did the work of prevention. And here's what I learned. Prevention science can be difficult, but it can also be very applicable to students. And I'm really good at launching, like taking a big, thick article and saying to students, here's the three things you need to do. And it can be actionable. Prevention is actionable. And then what I learned from that is that students who want to change environments and behaviors in risky situations, they do it. They do it. And 100%, I believe that fraternity men can take the big, hairy, crappy, what seems like an insurmountable problem and fix it with a little bit of guidance, with a little bit of science, with a little bit of prevention and support at the headquarters level. And that's what I got to do at PICAP. And I think that's what you do well, Fred, at Sigma Nu, is you are the coach and you know the research. And so you coach them into try it this way and they can usually get a better result. So that's how I got here.
That's fascinating. And I'm so appreciative to hear that narrative and that kind of background. Yeah. In many ways, you introduced the harm reduction philosophy into our field. It started with Ladder of Risk and some other initiatives that you led in the development and implementation at PICAPify during your time there, but continue to be, you know, a speaker and a thought leader in our field to really get a shift away from a compliance-oriented approach. I think much of our field was committed to in reaction to lawsuits and developments within the legal side of things, but recognizing that there's a place for that, but also coupled with that is a harm reduction approach and philosophy and a conversation in which we can help our students make healthier choices, give them the tools and skills and knowledge necessary to helpfully guide that decision-making. And I think it's paid significant dividends for our field. And obviously, like you said, you continue to open the doors in helping us translate the science into action on how we approach these conversations, as well as how the students themselves approach conversations within their own experience. So I know now you work at Holmes Murphy, one of the leading insurance brokers in our field for fraternities and sororities, and you oversee their educational initiatives. I'm curious, what continues to bring you back into this work? Why have you, I guess, what motivates you to continue working in this area?
Oh, good question. You know, I think some people in the mid-cycle of my life, like I have friends and colleagues who are just like, I'm tired of this work. I'm tired of my job. I'm tired. And I'm not. Like, I still feel that there's just so much to learn and to know and to do and to translate. And at the same time, you know, everyone wants to believe students are so different. And I don't believe students are different. I believe we're maybe raising them a little differently. I believe that, I mean, I have thoughts and theories to it, but I'm always trying to crack, like, look at the same problem through different lenses to see if we can get to better outcomes. And I think for my work at Holmes Murphy, it was just kind of a, hey, come here and you know, let's pick up what we tried to do at PICAP and can we scale it to 90 clients? And it's been fascinating. It's been fun. It's been great. And I think for me, part of the clients that I love there the most are these groups, these culturally based groups that were founded in the 1980s and the 1990s, because what they did in the 80s and 90s is pick up the risk management practices of the 80s and 90s. And like, they started, like, they'll say things and I'm like, when were you founded? Like 1988? They're like, how do you know that? I'm like, because that's the crap we were doing in 1988. So like, they're replicating the 80s and 90s. And I'm like, I am such an expert on this, like, because I can tell you that that doesn't work. And so it's just been fun to try to replicate that. And I think the other thing we've been able to do well at Holmes Murphy is just really this idea of collaboration. There are so many people now doing the work, the Piazza Center, Hazing Prevention Network, the Gordy Center. I mean, we are not without resources. And so for me, it's been about how do we get some collective brains together and just provide people some guidance versus just starting from scratch, which is what I think we were doing for a very long time in the past. But how do we give you some tools so that you can go forth and do it better? So I still believe in students. I love students. I still have hope for students. And, you know, over and over again, prevention science shows up in how students just try to stand up. I was at Clemson University a few weeks ago, and we were talking about power dynamics. That's my new fabulous, like, I want to talk about power all the time with college men. But I said to a student, like, the question was, is what is one thing you're going to do, like, to disrupt a power dynamic? What is one thing? And he stood up. He said, Dr. Hardin, we'll turn the lights on. I'm like, do you want to explain that? He's like, not at all. He said, but I can assure you, moving forward, I will walk in that room and I will turn on the lights and I'll stop it. And I'm like, okay. And that's all I needed to know, that maybe prevention's working with him because he's got something in him now and he's got one actionable tool to go back and do something. So that's why I still get like jazzed about it, because students say that and I'm like, great. Like, because I still believe in them.
Yeah, I can relate so much to that, because I oftentimes get asked the same question. I have friends and colleagues that are now entering their 40s like me and reevaluating where am I, you know, am I happy with where I'm at personally and professionally, and having those kind of reflection points. And I think the same, like, you know, last night I was facilitating a virtual meeting with a chapter. And, you know, here we are at 9 o'clock at night in a space talking about how to create a more consistently safe experience for our members and guests at our social events. I mean, what other environment do we engage in those kind of conversations where the students voluntarily want to come in that space and figure out how to do this in a safer way or healthier way? Or each January we have our president's conference. I'm there in the basement of that hotel on January 4th, talking with 20 and 21 year old leaders of our chapters about how we can support the mental health of our brothers and friends. It's just powerful. And like you, I mean, I just still find energy from interacting and working with college students and what they're bringing to the table, and how they've evolved, and how I feel like they're so much more aware of and committed to these type of health and safety concerns and prevention concepts than I felt like my generation was when we were going through. But also trying to figure out how to navigate still the realities of the college environment, the society in which we live, and the things and pressures that we get brought onto us. That may encourage us to go in a different direction. So it still fascinates me in a lot of different ways, and definitely energizes me when I get those opportunities to work directly with the college students in particular. I guess, you know, my next question is maybe more towards our volunteer audience. We have a lot of well-meaning, energized, passionate volunteers, like every fraternity and sorority, and they want to do right, and they want to help their chapters and their officers create a great and healthy and safe experiences. So in your experience, what are the common missteps maybe volunteers take in tackling health and safety issues with college students?
Yeah, and I'm going to give a shout out in case this kid is listening. The LSU president, the IFC president from LSU went to your, is it Commander's Retreat? Is that what it's called? Something?
College of Chapters.
Yes. And it transformed his life. So the work you're doing there is excellent. So if he's listening, shout out and you owe me a text about something, LSU IFC president. All right, advisors. So here is in our line of work, going back to my work with Pi Kappa Phi, over the course of years, as we, first of all, we are tackling public health issues. We're not tackling chapter problems. Alcohol, hazing, sexual assault, drug use, racism, sexism, homophobia, like all of these things are public health issues, loneliness, suicide. And so I like to frame the work we do to give people grace. Like, we're never going to fix all the public health issues, but what within our chapter can we tackle, can we make better? And so as we did the work of tackling public health issues, this framework, systems framework came into play, and it's called the 3P2E. It's philosophy drives our policies, policies drives our procedures, procedures drives education, education drives enforcement. I think what we do, we think we're doing prevention work, but we're just throwing darts at a board, as Dr. Linda Langford would say. We're just throwing darts everywhere and go, why didn't it get fixed? I like to think we have to, when we think about these complex questions of how do we put things in buckets, like, are we talking, like, when we go, what can advisors do? Are we talking about, should they know the policies? Sure. Are we talking about they should know the procedures and resources? Sure. They should educate? Sure. They should do enforcement. But really, I think what your question is philosophically, how do we approach the students? And in PICAP, in our training, that what we did was we were very clear with advisors. You know, your role and your scope is education, training, mature adult guidance. And I will always come back to that. What is the role of an advisor? Education, training, mature adult guidance. And that means even if there's rules and policies maybe you don't agree with, you're still going to be the mature adult guidance. Because if we can't teach them in college, like, here's the boundaries, here's the framework, they go into their first job thinking they can get away with stuff. And so our job is really still to be not a parent, and certainly not a drinking buddy, but how do we be the mentor? How do we have hard conversations? How do we cheer for them and support them and reward them, but also be the boundaries for them? I was working with a large chapter at University of Alabama, great award-winning chapter for their national organization. They'd gotten into some trouble, and not, I wouldn't say chapter trouble, but they had split off into so much unofficial stuff that it became very official real quick once it uncovered. And I sat with the officers doing some work. And after 3 hours, their chapter advisor, who is a respectable, amazing man in his 70s, you know, looked at them and said, "You've hurt my feelings. You have lied to me, and I am your brother. And I said later to the chapter president, like, I don't know if you really felt that. I think you heard it, but I need you to feel that this person loves the fraternity actually maybe more than you, and you have hurt him because you can't be truthful with him. And if you can't be truthful with him, you can't go into the world and be truthful with others. Like there's always going to be something about the world that you don't like or disagree with. So how do we come into community with each other and respect each other? And the advisors, God bless them all. The ones who stay, the ones who support us, the ones who don't give up, the ones who adapt and adjust. I mean, research like will show us, the Piazza Center research, that the biggest indicator for a successful chapter is the backbone of that advisor. So we need them. And I just think it is that boundaries, and it is to remember that your job is to keep the charter on the wall, to help them keep the charter on the wall, and to provide that guidance appropriately to do that work.
Yeah, that's powerful. There's no other, you can't really capture that sentiment in a workshop. You know, having an alumnus sitting there telling that story or that feeling that was generated by an unfortunate interaction with the chapter, it's so powerful. It's such good points about, you know, just finding that balance of mentor and not necessarily drinking buddy or necessarily the person that's coming in to enforce everything, but that mentor while holding them accountable and to a high standard, but doing so in a way that's coaching and allowing them to still be responsible for their own experience as collegiate students in a collegiate chapter. So that's great. And obviously you do a lot of work with a lot of Holmes Murphy clients as well as all sorts of other areas within our community. Are there any particular effective harm reduction strategies you're seeing emerge within the last 5 years or so with working with this current generation of college students? And when I say this, could be things that are applicable to chapter officers, to volunteers, to us at headquarters staff level, anything you're seeing out there that might be helpful?
A couple of things that I do to keep abreast. There is a group out there, and I always forget. I was like, I could have looked this up. NCCSLE. What national? Just go NCCSLE. And if you do this, it is about campus communities and coalitions, and they do a weekly like summary of the research of the information that's out there. NCCSLE. I follow that. I follow the Piazza Center research that's coming out. I also adapt to like Inside Higher Ed. I mean, I feel like I'm scanning and kind of seeing what's out there. For me, it's been, while people go, oh, she's a prevention expert, as I like to say, nope, I just know a lot of people who are the prevention experts. And unless you're doing the research, you're not a prevention expert. You happen to just be the knowledge keeper of prevention. So that's what I am. I know the experts. I think for me, I came out of the pandemic like realizing part of the gap was maybe not the prevention stuff, but sometimes like I have come out of it doing something different in the last couple of years. And it's really teaching students the systems for thinking. Like, what are you mad about? Okay, now you're really ready to do something. How do you put this into a framework to go do something? So that's kind of how my power stuff has really emerged. Like, do you can be an officer, but do you hold power? Once you hold power, how do you go into identifying the people causing the problems versus the environments causing the problems? Because if you can identify people versus environments, then that strategy is going to lead you to what action might come next. I do a lot of like teaching around expectations, intervention, accountability. And what we do know about students is they do want to hold people accountable. You over-threaten them all the time. We're going to hold you accountable. And then you don't have a standard systems. Like, these people are wise. They have crappy parents. You know, they know what they can get away with. Like, they, their whole life, their parents are, I'm going to take your phone. They don't take your phone. Like, when you say, I'm going to hold student accountable, and a kid puts, you know, a chair through the wall, and you don't do anything, he knows he can put more chairs through the wall. And so your job is not just to say, I'm going to hold you accountable, but to really raise the expectations in the chapters. So I still use prevention framework, but I've also come out of it trying to teach systems for thinking, because I know that students get, there's a problem, I want to fix it, now fear sets in. And it's like, okay, well, I'm getting out of office in a month. Well, that's when we actually need you to work, when you're getting out of office in a month, because you actually know something. So the systems for me have become, I think, very important, and it backs up the framework, right? Shift the people, shift the environment, limit the access and availability of alcohol, and you're going to shift behavior. So good old Lewin, you know, 1936, like that's where I joke that I've evolved into a systems thinker after 30 years of doing the work. But
it only took 30 years.
Yeah, I want a system for everything. I want like, okay, this is the problem. Like, how, tell me the steps that you're going to take. And I think that's important. Going back to that other situation, the chapter that I am working with that is not a Sigma Nu, you know, the chapter president calls, he's like, well, they're not going to let us have a party. And I'm like, why? You know, like, tell me more. And he was like, I'm like, dude, you have an alcohol-free house. Like, that's why the advisors are saying you can't have that. And he's like, well, in the past, I'm like, yeah, in the past, that's how we got here. And I'm like, in your mind, is there any thought that you could ever host an event without alcohol at your house? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, write it down. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you never go to your boss, like, right? Like your chapter advisor, you never go to the chapter advisor without a plan. Like if you want some, like if you got an advisor who is invested in the life of the chapter, you go with them with a business plan, a systems way of thinking. And I said, so you sit down with your risk manager, your social chair, you write up a plan for how you want to do the event. Don't just go ask a vague, dumb question. Go tell them how you want to do it. And you're more likely to get to a yes. And I think so many of our leaders, if they would start thinking about this, like in a business systems kind of oriented way, it would be easier for them to get to solutions and break some stuff down.
Yeah. And you know, part of that with the being careful about the assumptions you're making that, you know, it's not that everyone's trying to find a way to say no to what you want to do or the event that you want to plan. We just have to find a way in which we can support it. It may look somewhat different than what you had envisioned, but our commitment is to try to help you create the experience that you're wanting to create in a way that we can also support. It would feel like based on, you know, whether our policy or expectations, but otherwise just based on experience, we know we'll create or more effectively create the type of experience that you're looking to create and also do so in a safe way. But yeah, sometimes those assumptions, whether it's us working with students or vice versa, that can really break down that communication or even close a door that would otherwise be open to a productive conversation, a productive relationship that can really help everyone accomplish the things they wish to accomplish. You know, you talk about, you know, a bit, you touched there on kind of evolution of thinking. I'm curious, you know, especially, you know, there was an educational experience I once went through, and it was really powerful in which they talked about just some of the things we may not recognize when we're in it each and every day about how much has evolved in terms of prevention conversations. You know, seatbelts on babies in the back seat was not necessarily an accepted practice not too long ago. Now we've got, you know, these incredibly complex, you know, safety harnesses for kids up until basically 12 years old that they pretty much all societies accepted and invested, utilized. And same as like other big areas that are obviously well known, like tobacco use has come a long way over the last 30 years. Certainly drinking and driving has come a long way. So I'm curious in terms of the college student conversation, how do you feel the health and safety conversation has evolved through the course of your career?
This might get controversial. I always say this, and I say this in the most positive way. Students are listening, and students will do what we ask them to do. So are we asking them to do the right thing? So there's power. I mean, like, and I say this, let's go back in time to 2017. Good. I'm going to go back at like a generation here. 2017, when the NIC, there was four very public deaths. And I think the NIC at that moment was kind of like, we need to do something. I mean, that's what we all do. When there is, you do it when you're a parent, you do it when you're an advisor, like you see a trend of things and you're like, something's got to stop. And so at that moment, the NIC in a moment was like, no hard liquor, right? Like just no hard liquor in the experience. Now here's the good news or the sad news. Like when we look at all of the student related deaths, if we could pull out one thing and change one thing, the hard liquor, we would have had a lot more people alive. So it makes sense when you do kind of some problem analysis of what do we do? Let's get hard liquor out. And so in 2017, if you're walking around and you're listening to fraternity men, because everybody was saying it, the NIC, the national organizations, even the people who weren't in the NIC were supporting the efforts. Like we were collaborating and everybody was saying the same thing. So if you're on a college campus, the student's like, we have new rules. I'm like, what exactly is that? They're like, no hard liquor. And I'm like, well, let's go to the federal law, but whatever. So everybody was saying no hard liquor. And that was good. But that was the policy, right? Like that became the policy. But the implication became, what is the practice, right? Like, what is the practice of our of that? And the practice of that was, I think hard liquor went up to rooms. I think hard liquor got quieter. I think hard liquor went more into just hazing incidences when there was no women involved. Like, I think we saw it keep emerging in different ways. So I say this to you and translate that as one example to what is the big rule, right? Like, what is the big rule? And everybody has an opportunity to have a big rule. Every commander can have a big rule. And the big rule is sometimes a philosophy. The big rule, I've seen some people just say the big rule is do not put a hand on anyone. And you know what? If we did that, then we could reduce sexual violence. We could reduce assault and battery. We could reduce hazing. If we were not touching people inappropriately, that's a good big rule, sort of, you know, sort of. It's translated in dude land language. I've had, you know, chapter presidents say my big rule is do no harm to people. You do no harm. That's a nicer way to translate it. So everybody, when you think about what power do I hold, and even Sigma Nu, the national organization, like what is our big rule that we are asking of all people consistently? Research says that a person has to say something seven times until we begin to believe it. This is why in the election cycle, these people that are running, they're saying the same thing over and over again. If you really watch it over and over again, they say the same. They have the same platform because they want us to hear it over and over and over again. So we begin to internalize that. So I'm not sure of the question anymore, but what I am going to say is like, we all have an opportunity to give a big role, and chapter officers, you hold a lot of power in what do we expect of all people at all times in our community. And if we expect, you know, that we will treat all people with dignity and respect, that's kind of my big rule. Like if we just use the framework of we will treat all people with dignity and respect, you start doing the work of prevention because people philosophically begin to believe it is my job to treat people with dignity and respect. And that sets a tone versus just standing up and saying, don't haze, don't do this, don't do that. And people don't respond to that. I mean, like churches and synagogues and faith groups don't even do that. They like even at least try to make you feel better about like the crappy life you might be leading by inspiring you a little bit. So I think we all need to get in the business of kind of some inspiration. What's our big rule? And living that rule. But when I think about like how it has shifted and changed, which was the question, you know, I always think about for these people listening, and I'm going to assume it's going to be mostly officers, maybe some advisors, but you know, the big rule is that we get you out of here safe. And by officers, that means I don't want you to get arrested. I don't want you to have a record. I don't want you to have things on, you know, like that prevent you from going and living your life. And so that means you are the people responsible for creating an environment where you aren't purchasing the alcohol. You aren't providing the alcohol. You are not breaking the law on behalf of the chapter because it will not land well for you and your safety for the well-being. So you need to be selfish in how you make these decisions, and you need to think about yourself and change how we're doing it to keep yourself safe, to keep your members safe, and to keep your guests safe.
Yeah, it's such a good point. Like that mentality of self-preservation, but also that translates to chapter preservation, experience preservation, all those other the other related consequences of that mentality, but that philosophy of self-preservation. Hey, we want you to be able to serve this, get all the things you can get out of this experience, lead your chapter well, but do so in a way that's not going to cause significant repercussions either now or later in life as a result of something that happened, unfortunately. That's great. Yeah, interesting comments on, you know, hard alcohol, and there's been a lot of discussion certainly 10 years or 7 years ago. But now, you know, continuing that conversation and realizing that much like with everything in this area, which is so challenging, you talked about that dartboard earlier, there is no necessarily dart that's going to just vanquish all the things that we have to navigate in this area, just like in society. And yeah, I remember when I was interviewed for taking on the director of risk reduction role, our boss, executive director Brad Beecham asked me, why do you wish to serve as director of risk reduction for the fraternity? And you know, me at 23 years old, a little bit of rose-tinted glasses. But I said, I want to achieve the vision our founders had when they formed this fraternity to be a fraternity truly opposed to hazing. And Brad said, hey, that's awesome. That's great. Glad to hear it. You may want to lower the bar just a bit because there's a lot of things that contribute to the reality that unfortunately hazing still occurs in our organization and unfortunately many others. And while we ultimately do want to continue directing ourselves to that goal and that vision that our founders laid out 155 years ago, the reality is we may never see that ultimately happen in our life because of all the other things that play into that. But we certainly have made progress, I feel, not just Sigma Nu, but I'm talking as a society, and you know, some of the things happening, like the bullying prevention conversation, where that is as a society. And I think of, you know, when I went through high school, you know, it was kind of an accepted practice that that's just part of the rite of passage of high school to where it is today. I feel like it's not as prevalent or is at least condoned and supported. Not that it still does not happen. I guess I'll find out myself as I have an 11-year-old that will be entering high school here in a few years. You know, there's progress. There's been a lot of progress made, and that certainly continues to give me hope. I guess always at the end of these podcast interviews and conversations, I love to leave our audience with just one or two tangible items they could take away as here's something I can do this week, this month, this semester in this area. So when in your area, what are one or two steps you think a chapter officer or alumni advisor can take right now to support the creation, that kind of values-based culture within their chapter?
So I was watching a Tyler Perry movie the other day, and it was like 10 years old, and I thought, oh, it's going to be funny because it's Tyler Perry. It was not funny at all. And it was the lives of these five single women, and four of them were pretty privileged and one was not. But she's, you know, as in all good stories, turned out to be the rock star who kind of kept them all together, challenged them and pushed them. And one of these weepy moms is like crying to this woman who, you know, was struggling to make ends meet. And she said, how do you do it? Like, how do you do it? And she's like, you don't think about it. You just do the next thing and then you do the next thing. And I tell you that story to connect that to the fraternity presidents that I have worked with who have been in over their head, who have been one blink away from chapter shutting down. Like when they choose to find an adult, they're like, okay, Dr. Hart, you're going to be my person and I'm going to be honest with you and I'm going to talk to you. The thing about prevention is if it hasn't happened, you're allowed to tell Fred whatever the heck is going on because you're trying to prevent something from happening. So prevention is honesty. If it's already happened, we're not in a prevention conversation anymore. So use your opportunity to do prevention conversations. Find a person. You got nobody? I'm not hard to find. I always say this, like you can like be like, I heard your podcast. I'd like to stalk you a little bit and I'd like to talk to you about a problem. I'll do it. And so the presidents that I have worked with have been those people who were like, I worked with a guy and he was like, I mean, one shot, I was like, this letter basically says, if y'all like blink wrong, you're done. Huge SEC school, big SEC chapter. And he said, okay. And here's what I said to him. I'm like, what is the next thing that's going to happen when your chapter is going to like get shut down? He was like, oh, that'd be bid day. I was like, okay. So I said, let's re-envision bid day. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, are you willing to stop what you were doing and re-envision it? So instead of talking about what we've done in the past, we're going to talk about what we're going to do in the future. We reshifted the environment. I was like, do you have volleyball? Do you have cornhole? Do you have music that's not that is not disrespectful to people of color and women? Do you have a flag? Do you have a chef who can make a meal? Do you have like the ability to tell the members they can't drink? And everything he said was like, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am. So I happened to be on campus that night. He's like, Dr. Lori, you need to come by. And I'm like, I ain't really good because I did not want to be like the headquarters person cruising by and seeing something. Fred, I was like, let me stay out of it. He's like, come on by. I got new curtains at the he got him at like a resale place. He's like, I want to show you my new curtains. I was like, okay. So I cruised in. I could tell, I mean, people were looking at me in anger and there was cornhole and there was volleyball and there was all these things. And he reshifted midnight and we fixed it. A month or two later, he told me he didn't have any of that equipment, that he had lied about it, but he went and got it because I told him to. Then I said, well, what's the next thing that's going to get you in trouble? He said, that would be the new member event coming up this weekend. I said, well, how are we going to re-envision it? And he said, I'm not taking the big brothers. Why? Well, that's who's doing the hazing. Stopped it. And then I sent him with a staff member to do activities. The next thing, and we literally went through a whole year not thinking about the big insurmountable crappy problems of the chapter. It's just the next thing. So I know it feels overwhelming, but all you got to do is get to the next thing and fix the next thing. And then you can get to the next thing rather than thinking about like the big insurmountable public health issues that you're experiencing. So that's my best advice.
That is outstanding, Lori. Thank you. I'm taking that and going to start applying to my work. That's so, so true. Just, you know, piecing it together in one thing, focus that small step you can take and start attacking that and then move on to the next thing. That's so great. So, Lori, again, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for spending time with us here on the Gavel podcast, but always good catching up. We get to cross paths every now and again at conferences, but it's been far too long. I'm so appreciative of the fact that we were able to hang out this afternoon, and thank you again for agreeing to do this with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
10,000 brothers, where you
Sigma Nu. All right, welcome back, everyone. Fred, awesome interview with Lori. Like you said up top, I mean, just a giant in the industry, and somebody that is always engaging whenever I've been able to see her speak, and to have her on the podcast. I mean, definitely is a huge opportunity for our members to kind of learn from one of the experts, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just, to put it bluntly, she is just so dang smart. She is so good at taking research and science and translating it in a way that, a general member, officer, volunteer, us staff can understand. These incredibly complex concepts from health and safety science and research, and she's able to translate that in a way and put language around it that really makes it make sense and allows us to understand better of how this work, how this research informs the work that we do and the conversation we're having. So again, blown away by her comments and what she was able to share with us.
Yeah, I loved it. Kind of in the back and forth of setting up the interview, she said something that I think is really neat. She said that, humbly, of course, she said, "Oh, I'm no expert. I just channel expertise from other experts," right? I think there's a certain level of expertise in channeling expertise, right? But that expertise that she's channeling and the research that's been done by, all of these organizations, helps inform on the resources that Sigma Nu puts together. And, I think Fred, you wanted to share some of the resources that we have available to our members.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about translating, research or conversation into practical tools. If you're inspired after hearing this podcast, man, I would love to learn more about some things I could be doing to take what Lori shared and translate it into action in my own chapter. The sigmanu.org/social planning webpage is where it starts. So sigmanu.org/social planning. That is our one-stop shop. There is a ton of resources on our website. The creation of that webpage was intended to put all of our resources related to event planning and all the things associated with that complex responsibility of planning a proper event with or without alcohol on one webpage. So again, sigmanu.org/social planning is where you can find all of those resources. And then second, if you go to the collegiate members section of our website, there's a section within there called educational programs. That is kind of our one-stop shop for all of our programs that are not within the LEAD program umbrella. So things like Behind Happy Faces for our volunteers, as well as our members and officers, things like our mental health work with Active Minds and the creation of our Validate, Appreciation, and Refer mental health support tool, Digging to You, our work in sexual assault prevention and bystander intervention, all of those type of resources and educational experiences are all housed within our educational program section of our website. So again, social planning area of our website, and educational programs area of our website, a couple of great starting points as you want to explore more how you can implement some of these things on health and safety that we talked about in today's podcast.
Yeah. And real quick, we talk about this in every episode, but we really try to make our show notes for the episode as robust as possible so that way you have quick access to those. So, if you're trying to remember, hey, Fred provided this link in the podcast, but I can't remember where, in the episode it was. And so you're like, instead of scrolling back to try to find that reference, we provide those links in the show notes for you. And Fred, as always, is being very humble. Fred has literally won awards in recognition on behalf of the general fraternity for the work that Sigma Nu has done in creating these resources. There are plentiful resources available for officers and advisors. Strongly recommend anyone who took away a lot from this episode or just has a general responsibility for advising or directly impacting the risk reduction and health and safety initiatives of our chapters to take a look at those resources.
Yeah, and it's so you know, one thing that I really admire you know, about our current generation of active members is the you know, level of dedication that that they demonstrate to you know mental health, to the well-being and safety of the members of their chapter. You know, really, it comes down to just you're looking out for your brothers and you're supporting them and you're supporting your community. You know, like they really have gotten that. I think through. You know, 2020 and being remote and, you know, all this stuff, like it really put into sharp perspective for a lot of our members that, you know, particularly mental health, but also your health and safety in general is, you know, such a priority for them. So, you know, that's where, you know, you guys, like if you feel that passion, and I know that all of our members do, like these are the resources that can help you take action on that. So, yeah, like has been said, please check out the show notes. For those links and go check those out. Christopher, Fred, any final notes before we depart?
Nothing on my end. Just, you know, thank you to Christopher and Adam, our longtime hosts of the Gavel podcast, for all the great work you guys do on this. And of course, most importantly, thank you to all our listeners that continue to enjoy the podcast and sharing ideas and how we continue to make sure that this is a experience that is serving the likes and demands of our audience.
Awesome.
And thank you to Fred, who continues to step in anytime that we have someone really, really, really smart on the podcast and we need him to match their intelligence.
Yeah.
Hey, I love it. It's like having a conversation with a friend that happens to be recorded. So I'm happy to do that anytime.
Of course. Awesome. Well, as always, you know, thank you all for listening. And if you enjoyed the show, best thing you can do is to go and share it with a brother. You know, normally this is where a podcast host might say, rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Nah, we don't need those. Just share it with a brother. That's the best way to help spread it around to the people who need it. So if you enjoyed the show, please do that. And we will see you next month. Bye, everyone.
Who am I, sir? A fraternity man am I? A Sigma, a new sir, and will be until I die. I'm rickety hoop-dee-doo. What's the matter with Sigma new? Hallabaloo, Terrica, who altogether forsake?